Welcome to How Do You Like It So Far? This is Colin McClay and
Henry Jenkins.
And we are thrilled to be bringing you the second part of the live performance that we did here at USC in early February with a Visions and Voices, a university-wide event exploring the power and pleasure of podcasting. The first episode had the performances of these amazing podcasters, and this section has the question-answer session that we did immediately after that performance. So again, we have Chenjerai Kumanyika from Uncivil, Davia Nelson and Nikki Silva, the Kitchen Sisters, Melina Bobadilla and Brenda Gonzalez from Tamarindo, and Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash from Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Just a remarkable lineup. And if you like their performances, you will love the Q&A session. And if you didn't have a chance to listen to the performances, no problem. You can enjoy the Q&A and go back and listen to the performances later. They work independently. It's remarkable.
So modular and all.
Exactly. So let them take it away.
Vetting. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to pull everyone up here. A little arranging of chairs here to make this work. I hope you enjoyed the performances as much as I did. It's great to hear voices in my head actually projected onto a stage. It's pretty incredible. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I think I invented some of these people. all real, yes. So in any case, we're all here. I'm going to ask some questions and we'll get some quick responses from people to what the audience wants to hear. So first up is the question, what has been the most challenging aspect of podcasting for you personally and professionally? Anyone who wants to jump in, just take it away.
I'll start. The most challenging part has been to be consistent and be able to dedicate the time to have it come out as often as we would like. That's been the most challenging.
It's my fault because acting scheduling is terrible.
And having a job,
right.
Full-time job.
We both have very different schedules. She has a full-time nonprofit job, and I have a crazy schedule where sometimes, you know, for like 3 months, I'll have to go back and forth to New York, and I'm like really depressed about my carbon footprint because of that. but, yeah, we just, you know, the scheduling is hard, and also I have to say that this is a labor of love, but it is a free labor that we are doing right now, and I think that that's one of the challenges that I think I'm sure will be discussed over the next couple days, is that not every podcast is housed at a public radio station or Earbuds Collective or sponsored by Spotify. Many of us make time to do the research, to do well-produced work, well-researched work, focused work. And we're lucky because, you know, as Brenda said, Jeff, we also call him DJ Jefe, he is a producer because I don't fucks with the soundboards, but we're lucky that he does, you know, the editing and producing for us. And because of that, he has a studio with a crew. So we have access to a sound studio, but when we don't have the time to drive over there, we have literally recorded in her closet. So, you know, scheduling and lack of funding, I would say.
Okay, others?
I think, I'm sure you probably have this experience. I think for us, one of the things that has happened was we started our podcast when we were in the bliss of the Obama era. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hate crime, hate crime, hate crime. And just having to report on anti-Muslim bias and hate crimes consistently really does take a toll on our health and our mental wellness, which is why we are deliberately a once-a-month show. I think if I had to talk about this once a week, we definitely wouldn't have lasted as long as we have. I definitely would have, you know, I just would not be happy. And it's a lot easier for me to be happy when I don't have to talk about it once a month, even though it is consistently there. But I also work at a nonprofit in my day job, and this is my life. Like, being an activist is my life, and having to do this is really important. But it's just, it's so hard. It is so hard to maintain that.
So how did you think of names for your podcast?
We have a fun origin story. Taz and I met because we were both a part of the anthology Love Inshallah, The Secret Love Lives of American Muslim Women. We both had sexy stories. And at Q&As, we were always, like, you know, giving the snarky comments.
We were really funny together.
We were funny.
But I'm not a comedian, so I don't really think that I'm funny unless I'm with someone with this personality. And I just, like, had so much joy with that.
And I'm very funny. And I bring joy out of the people who are with me. And so for a year, we would joke on Twitter saying, like, ate pork today, but, you know, it was from a sustainable farm, hashtag good, bad Muslim. You know, and we would, like, go back and forth with the hashtag good Muslim, bad Muslim, good, bad Muslim, until we started saying...
Well, no, people were asking us. They were like, oh, where can I hear this podcast? And we're like, we're making fun of the fact that podcasts... There's a podcast for everything.
And I was like, quiet, Taz, let people think we have a podcast. And so we actually ended up being interviewed by PRI's Global Nation about our podcast the day that we had decided to record our first episode. And it's just been an amazing roller coaster ride since. And we decided that, like, that day that we were going to be the good Muslim, bad Muslim podcast. And, you know, our goal has been to, like, break that binary so that every time somebody asks who's the good Muslim, who's the bad one, we get to say all of us are bad. It's a trick question.
We had a horrible working title of our show for a long time, which was Civil Warriors. An uncomfortably long time that was, like, contracts and stuff, Civil Warriors, quote, like, that's on a contract. And then Jack and I became sure that we wanted to call the show Contraband, because that was a name that was actually given to enslaved people who had escaped and was following Sherman around. So we were, like, really sure it was Contraband. We were excited, but then we kind of did, like, a test run. And I was, like, in fear of sort of, like, Black Twitter the whole time we were making the show. I was like, this is just a land. It was like a minefield. They're going to kill us. So I just kind of floated it, and they were like, oh, hell no. Contraband? You really going to use that word that they use to refer to us? And so we were like, oh. So then there was this series of horrible names after that, because then I was like, well, this is my chance to insert politics more into it. So I was just like, we could call it White Supremacy Takedown. You know, I was just coming with all kind of names. I just cut loose. And it's funny when you're in, like, these sort of spaces that are predominantly white, because they're, like, passively, they're not going to say no to that, right? They would just sort of passively just be like, oh, yeah. That's interesting. And it's like, you just don't hear about it again. And so finally we landed on Uncivil, and that resonated, and I think it kind of spoke to, you know, the sort of pushback against respectability and civility.
I just want to say that fear of Twitter is very real, because we don't want to get dragged, and sometimes I have been that person who drags. So I'm scared of other people that are like me when they're in a bad mood and they have Twitter fingers. So I feel you.
Well, one thing I think we've liked about podcasting is just that sort of experimental flexibility. We had a different name. Fugitive Waves. We started out with Radiotopia, and we took Fugitive Waves, which I just love. I love, love. Thomas Edison talked about untangling fugitive waves. I mean, it's got a real history, and we did some... You can go listen to episode one, and you'll hear about Thomas Edison and Fugitive Waves, but nobody got it. And I think that's one of the things with with podcasting is I think it's too bad, you know, the silo... If you don't have something that's, you know, recognizable, that someone's just going to fixate on right away, you're in big trouble, you know? So we cleverly took our own name, Kitchen Sisters Present, which is equally confusing because we don't really focus exclusively on food, which everybody thinks we do, although we do Hidden Kitchens, but then we do Hidden World and Girls and The Keepers And we just want to do it, and we want people to come to it. But I think it's a real issue in podcasting, you know, just getting recognized and, you know, people have to find you.
Yeah. An experience that I often have when I say tamarindo, everybody wants to know, is it in Spanish? So I can relate to that challenge. But tamarindo, we came up with the name mostly because the song was really cool. When you hear it, so producer Jeff slash DJ Jefe
slash your husband,
he made the original sound of Tamarindo, and I think it's super duper cool. So originally, when we were brainstorming names, we had like more goofy names, but when we heard the music, it was just so cool. And I don't know, Tamarindo just came out. And then later we built a story around the name. And I think a lot of Latinx people, I mean, we happen to both be Mexican-Americans, and all the co-hosts in the history of Tamarindo have been Mexican-Americans. But Tamarindo is something, that flavor resonates across many, many people of color, but also many Caribbean countries and many other Latin countries. And also what I like about Tamarindo flavor is that you can have it, you know, rolled in sugar, rolled in chile. There's fancy drinks that you can have with it. It's very versatile and very diverse, and that is what the Latino experience is. So that's why we picked Tamarindo.
We added that meaning after. Well, because I didn't pick it. It was her ex. We don't like to talk about, I'm kidding. No, it's all love. It's all good. I'm kidding. No, but I was recording a few episodes, and I'm like, wait, why did you name it Tamarindo? And then we were speaking somewhere, and I think one of the questions was that, and I was like, well, I guess I better find my own connection to it. So that's when we're like, yeah, it's this flavor, fruit that you can use in so many different ways, and it just represents the resilience and diversity amongst the Latinx community. So we'll go with that.
Yeah.
And food is the universal language, right? Everybody
yes.
eats. Music and food. If you're looking for connective tissue, if you're looking for a way to get across, food brings people together. So Tamarindo, and she who controls rhythm controls.
I like that.
All right, so we have a technical question. What is your favorite podcast recording software? And I suspect many of you have technicians in the booth who would tell us that.
I don't even know her. No, I have no idea.
Like Mariah, I don't know her.
Okay, does anyone have an answer for this?
That was our answer. I don't like it.
All right.
I mean, I think what that.
No, go ahead. So this is like favorite podcasting tech. Now I'm going to change the question.
Yeah, okay, sounds good.
My favorite podcasting technology is Revision. So that's the technology that's most useful. I don't care what platform. I'm not here to sell people's platforms. So, but Revision is really important because you got to show your writing that love. You know what I mean? And it takes time to find your voice. So those kind of technologies I think are really important.
Yeah, I was going to add that I think that signifies how much time the technical component takes. It is a completely different person's entire job.
Mm-hmm. Except in our case where it's Nikki Silva's job, and she does everything else too.
Please give a huge round of applause
exactly,
for her.
Exactly. May I just say, you are looking at all those stories you were hearing. That's Nikki's hand doing all that.
And she's on the road doing a lot of the interviewing. So,
may we say, if we'd gone to the 13th minute of our 10-minute presentation, you would have seen a card that said collaboration is king, although in our case collaboration is queen. And I would say, even if you're seeing, well, look, everybody on the stage is co-hosting, and that's also how you can make a podcast sing and make it so it doesn't slay you, because it is a dragon slayer to have these deadlines and to keep a good story going and to have great music and to just put it out in the world. And it's just more fun. Way more fun to be in the closet with somebody, right?
Yeah. This is the only time it's okay. Or not okay, but you know.
It's fine.
Where it's like emotionally safe. But I will add one thing in that, you know, when we've spoken at universities or at other events, we often get asked, why podcasting? What do you like about it? And I think for me, it's a very particular medium that is it's a democratized kind of medium. Because even in that question, you can see that there is this apprehension to really get into the technical aspect, or not even an apprehension, I would love to, but it's just not the language that I speak. And so I think something beautiful about podcasting is that you don't have to have access to the most perfect software, the most perfect mics. You just need your voice, your authentic voice, and something to record on. I mean, essentially, you could make your own podcast
by recording on your phone voice memos, or there's a number of free apps. Now, yes, we can get into like, oh, I don't like the plosives, and I can hear ambient noise, and that's bougie. But I think that one of the beautiful things about podcasting is the fact that it's this accessible medium for almost like a citizen's journalism, a brand of journalism, if you will. And I'm not saying we're at Annenberg, I'm not saying I'm a journalist, okay?
I think that that's been one of the really liberating things for me, for us, is just, I mean, we come from public radio, and, well, we started in live radio, which I think podcasting is a lot more like, and it's kind of wonderful. It's hearkening back to that looser, more collaborative, who knows what's going to happen feel. But I know how I think things should sound, and I'm kind of hardcore. Oh, that doesn't sound. I can hear those edits. And podcasting has just kind of erased that. It's like, what's it about? Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, it's a little shaky, but that's really an interesting story, which I never would have heard otherwise, because it would have been coming from a studio or some other higher place or some more experienced journalistic place. So I totally have been impressed by podcasts.
One last thing. Jeff uses Ableton. I remembered.
Okay.
We use Pro Tools.
Okay. We use Audacity.
Pro Tools.
Hindenburg is a good place to start, too.
All of these companies should sponsor everyone on here.
I'm with you.
Yeah. No free advertisement.
So I got two questions about stories. The first is, how do you find the stories you feature on your podcast? And the second is, do you ever feel there's a shortage of topics to discuss? Does writer's block ever keep an episode from being completed? So anyone want to tackle either of those or both?
So ours is more of a newsy. Well, I mean, we're not newsy, but we try to stay current, because one of the things that we realized is that Muslims are so in the news that if we, you know, record something and then we wait too long, then we're out of the news cycle. So we actually have to wait until a couple days before we record to get all of our content. That being said, we use the hashtag. It's so silly to me that the title of our podcast is a hashtag, but really it started because we were on Twitter and having these conversations. So whenever we see something happening on Twitter or in the news, we'll use the hashtag so that when we do our research on when we're making our agenda, we can just do a search for the hashtag. It's silly, but it's useful. And the other thing that we do is, because we are both memoirists, we're both writers, and we like to tell stories about ourselves, we try to keep track of different stories that are happening in our lives so that we could use that. So that's always fun for our awkward Ask a Muslim segment, where we're kind of forced to track all the microaggressions we experience in life.
One of the saving graces of that, especially for me as a Muslim comedian, is that it's almost like another kind of assault, the news. While Muslim, to be in the position where you're constantly required to, talk about it, react to it, have a joke about it, have a punchline ready, you know, but it's happening so quickly, and the accusations sound exactly the same, but are so frequent, and there's such a demand that we show our value by educating everybody about it on behalf of all Muslims. And so one of the ways that we were able to not do that was to be monthly, so that we had to search for the evergreen topic in that month and make it so that it could stand on its own.
I'm thinking of our Hidden Kitchen series and how it was born. I don't like to drive all that much, and this is pre-Lyft and all that era. And I live in San Francisco, and I would take a lot of yellow cabs. Every time I got in a yellow cab, I would notice that the driver was from Brazil, and not just from Brazil, but from the same town in Brazil, Goiânia. And it turned out that 436 drivers from yellow cab were all from Goiânia. And Nikki and I had done a lot of stories in Brazil over the years, and I spoke some Portuguese, which I would also advise, learn languages. That is one of the greatest ways to find stories, one of the greatest ways to connect to the world. But so I was in a lot of these cabs and talking with people, and like I said before, what is the universal language? Music and food. So I knew a lot of Brazilian music, and we would start talking about food, and one night one of the drivers said to me, you should really come to the Yellow Cab Yard. There's Jeanette. She comes every night at midnight and has this late night mobile rolling night kitchen, and she cooks Brazilian food for all the Brazilian cab drivers. And it was like, she's on this abandoned road out in the middle of nowhere, this industrial street on the far side of Yellow Cab in San Francisco. And I went, well, but I'm not a cab driver. And they just said, no, just look like you're a cab driver. Just walk into the lot, just park there, and just walk out the other end. So one night at midnight, I drove to the cab yard, just parked. I'm like, at that point in this was like 2005, recording equipment was still about 25 pounds of recording equipment. No other cab driver had a headphones on and a microphone, but okay, I've been told to do this. Turn the corner, and there, like a little mirage, is Jeanette and this little blue tent and this rolling night kitchen. The van is open. Brazilian sambas are just pouring out onto the street, and there are all these Jeanette's little boys asleep in the van, and she's cooking all this great Brazilian food, and there's Brazilian drivers and Iranian drivers and Russian drivers. And it was in that moment came this hidden kitchen vision. And it was like, if Jeanette is out there on the street cooking for her community at midnight, who else is out there in the world cooking like this? And I came home, I told Nikki the story. We both just suddenly had hidden kitchen vision. And I think now we are on to our 127th hidden kitchen story. So that's another great way to find.
Just keep rolling in.
Yeah, if you find a good title, like we just search The Keepers, Hidden World of Girls, Hidden Kitchens. Developing a good little phrase. What's your hidden kitchen?
What's your show? I love those little things you do in your shows. I
rituals love our fatwas.
And titles. Yeah, your fatwas, and you guys do yours. I mean, that's great, brilliant.
Stories pour in. Those little frames help stories come to you. You're having a little through line, and telling other people's stories to the stories you're trying to grab. A lot of times we feel like the ambassadors of stories. And you're bringing, you know, you're asking people to tell your story, but you're bringing good ones too. That's part of the job, the gig.
Yeah, one thing I'll add is that we're very fortunate to be in Los Angeles. There's never a shortage of amazing guests to feature. There's not enough time. There's way more guests than we have time to fit in. So there's always a shortage. And like the Muslim community, Latinos are also very much in the news and vilified by the president and ever since his campaign, and that's when the show started. So there isn't a shortage of things to put in la basura or to send a chanclazo to. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of a twisted pride to have, you know, like this sad badge of honor. Like they also love to hate us, you know, like maybe this week it's us, maybe next week it'll be you guys. My partner's actually Arab, and we like to say that we are the nightmare couple of the Trump administration. We're gonna make little Mexican Arab babies. So boo.
Hold on to your prayer rug.
Please. Oh, will you bring me a prayer rug swaddling cloth? Please. Yes. So when really in all seriousness, when you exist in this place of having layered oppressions, right? As women, as women of color, as daughters of immigrants, you were formerly undocumented. I think that there's not a shortage of topics. What we do have to zero in on is what our angle is and how we want to start unpacking something. And although we are both Mexicanas, Chicanas from Los Angeles, we're both left of center, we do have very, sometimes very different approaches in how we analyze sociopolitical issues. And newsflash, Latinx people are not monolithic. So I like to say that, without getting too much into it, that if we would have started doing the show during the primaries in 2015, we probably would have pulled each other's hair. And I'm not going to tell you who supported who and who didn't support the other, but, you know. Well, anyway, one of them wears, I think they both wore blazers, really, like, poorly. Anyway, the style wasn't why we were voting for them or not, but that's one. And also, I think that being that I'm in the entertainment industry, I am
obsessed with media and representation, but I also have a background in critical race theory as a former as an ethnic studies major, and we're both binge watchers, and you know we're able to talk about what we're watching on Netflix or on Hulu or on HBO, but with a critical lens. So we have more trouble deciding what to talk about.
So one last question before we break for yummy food that awaits people. The title was The Power and Pleasure of Podcasting. So what do you each see as the primary power and pleasure of this medium that we've been talking about tonight?
My co-host.
Stop it.
Stop it. Aww. She's just trying to get
That's
points.
That's cute.
I think for me the pleasure, besides Zara, the pleasure is that we finally have a voice. Like, two Muslim women usually don't have voices, especially when we were doing the book tour for Love Inshallah. We would get all the stupidest questions on the book tour about, like, do Muslim women have voices? You know, just the stupid question of Muslim women.
What do you think of child brides? What do you think of nuclear weapons?
It's so dumb. It's so dumb how we're boxed in.
Is your father a terrorist? Is your brother a terrorist?
And it's so nice to not... It's so nice to not have, you know, okay, so one of the, because this is a podcasting thing, one of the struggles we had was that within our first 6 months of podcasting, all these big podcasting companies wanted to own us, right? They wanted to give us contracts where they would own our voice.
Our intellectual property. Some of them snuck in, like, life rights. That was a thing to look out for.
And we went through three different networks, and we decided, nope, we're going to own ourselves. And it's been harder because we don't have money to run things, but we get to say what we want to say, which is a really integral to our ethics and why we do the things that we do. And I think that's where I get pleasure, is the ability to say what I need to say without having to worry about the white gaze or white money.
Yeah. Bring me the white money. That's fine. That's fine. In addition to that, I would like the beautifully said. The only thing for me to add to that, other than my love of Taz, to double down on that, is the ability to not have to be an expert. You know, to be able to come from a position that is like, you know, I don't have, like, performing as a comedian, you're solo, and there's a lot of expectation when you're on stage as a performer, singular, that you're going to be that person to represent. And if there's complexity, you're going to be that singular representation of all of that complexity, and you're going to be able to speak on it as an authority. And being able to show up to the podcast with Taz, for me, has meant that I get to show up as myself and hang out with my bestie and talk the way that I talk to my bestie and not have to feel like I have to be this authority on all things and be able to present myself as I am. And as a writer, as a comedian, as a creative, that, I would say, has been the thing that has made me the most successful.
I think for us, a lot of it is this collaboration idea again, and it's we are fortunate to be with Radiotopia, which is PRX's Radiotopia, which is kind of this model for independent producers. We're very fortunate to be with that group. And
it's a podcast collective of about how many shows? 17 now? 2,040
And I think
shows?
It's a real model for things that I hope can happen outside, beyond PRX's Radiotopia, that other people can look at. Because that idea of somebody owning your voice... No, you don't want it, and don't do it. And so that's one of the great things. But the other thing about Radiotopia, and actually things like this, is just the community and kind of, wow. I mean, look at the diverse group and the stories and how much we're just all learning being here together. I think for me, that's really exciting. It's pushing. We've been working together for many, many years in radio, and every new project pushes us, and this whole project of podcasting has really pushed it out there in some new directions. So,
I would say, for me, one thing is in terms of the pleasure. I like to be transported, particularly when there's so much traumatic stuff going on. The problem is sometimes I'm being transported into other traumatic stuff. Like, I'm going to listen to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim and be transported into that. But there is a thing with the storytelling and with the things where it just takes me out and takes me into another space. And I think that that's what's really, I can think of some of my favorite podcasts where, you know, when I hit a certain episode, I just stop doing things I should have been doing and just lay down. Like, I'm doing this for the rest of the day, you know? So there's a real pleasure there. In terms of the power, I mean, I would also say it's a podcasting is a culture of listening, right? Like, we're all signing up to listen to other people. Can you, all incredible people on this panel right now, can you imagine if, like, these same conversations was happening, but there was a trash man there interrupting the conversation instead of you just having to listen to the episode, right? How annoying that would have been. So I like the idea that I can tune into this and I'm just going to listen, right? And so that's what I really enjoy.
I really have enjoyed being part of this community and just meeting amazing people. Like the guests that I've met. I mean, I met Melina because I had a podcast. Just having that tool to say, I have a podcast. You want to be on it? And I've met amazing people. So I think that's been really a true pleasure. And also finding a community, something that happened soon after thinking that there weren't that many Latino podcasts. There's actually a ton. And there's a whole Facebook group, Support Brown Podcast. There's a number of Latinx podcasters. But it's so small that we all know each other. And I do like that feeling of being part of a community.
Yeah. I think what I would highlight is simultaneously the power and pleasure for me is being able to expand on the conversation, essentially. Like add to the general dialogue that's happening around particular issues and bring nuance to it, because I often, very often, too often, I'm scrolling through Twitter and Instagram, and I kind of like to torture myself by reading comments, the comment sections. Anybody ever read the comment section on ignorant posts? But you need to know what people are thinking and how they're approaching something for a very twisted, hateful, oppressive way. But I think that being able to talk it out with Brenda and to again, bring nuance and complexity to a conversation around something is really it's healing, it's cathartic, and I like that. And I just want to say, like, yes, there's Support Brown Podcast, and now it's kind of moved towards a direction of being Support Latinx Podcast, right? Because you can be Latinx and be Afro Latino, you can identify as Indigenous. So we need to highlight that, but that's a whole other conference, which you can invite us to as well.
Okay, well, this has been an incredible evening. Let's join me.
Thank you.
And I want to encourage folks out there who are not yet making podcasts to go out there and get started. Why the hell not? Right? Tell your stories. Help us hear your voices, because your voices will help change the world. So, after that, go get some food. Meet our guest.
Hope you enjoyed that, those conversations and that Q&A session as much as we did. I was sitting in the audience just blown away by the thoughtfulness and insight and diversity of experience and perspective and style of these this just wonderful group of podcasters. And as a result, in part, Henry and I have decided to do a deeper dive in podcasting. Some of you may recall, we kind of got into this whole podcasting thing because we were curious about this phenomenon. We figured we might as well dive in by making our own show. And this is just a great chance to kind of take a step back and reflect on the field and where podcasting is and where it's going with some of these remarkable emerging leaders. And so we'll do that over the next couple of shows.
Yeah, I mean, we have so much to learn from these veterans who've been doing it in some cases, 6 months longer than we have, but who are nevertheless doing incredible things out there in the world with podcasting and really represent the diversity of voices and perspectives that the podcast community is pulling together. But I learned so much just listening and talking to these amazing people over those few days.
Yeah, I think I don't know that you said we have so much to learn. I don't know if I'm going to be capable, no matter how talented they are.
Yeah.
But I was absolutely inspired and excited and reminded just of how wonderful podcasting is and can be, and also a bit, you know, concerned because I want to preserve the remarkable dynamics that we're seeing within podcasting. And a part of that's to understand it better and to explore it and also to celebrate it.
I mean, to me, one of the exciting things about podcasting is just the openness and participatory nature of this medium, that anyone who's got an urge can create something. They may not find an audience right away. They may have to work hard on the technical sides of it, but it's a more open medium by far than broadcasting, say, which required you to have access to an entire studio and the wavelengths that attach to that studio in order for your voice to be heard. And that's allowing people do just-in-time responses to public events of one sort or another. New voices emerging as they're needed to speak to the issues that affect their community, as we heard in several of the stories there.
Yeah, in so many ways, the opposite of the way mainstream media has functioned for such a long time, and where you see so many deficits in different authentic voices, which is something that I think here is really, you know, the core of it, the strength of it.
You know, we did a series last season about cultural criticism, and there was a lot of debate we had around whether podcast counts as cultural criticism. And I think what we've heard here demonstrates the importance of that. It may not be arts journalism in a classical sense, but, you know, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, Tamarino are shows where people gather together to talk about culture, broadly defined as the everyday practices of everyday people, as a merger of citizen discourse about the news and responses to pop culture and those intersections in between, which are where our interest certainly lies. And so I would count these discussion programs as forms of cultural criticism that are allowing minority voices to be heard today.
And I think it's interesting. All of these shows have been tremendously successful in their way, and they're starting to get attention from Hollywood and from other kind of more mainstream and traditional media makers and distributors. And so something about that to me is really exciting, recognizing that it's actually awesome to have different kinds of voices and hear genuine perspectives. And also part of it scares me a little that, you know, I keep thinking of the episode with Jane Gaines, Enter the Bankers. You know, when the money comes in, how are things going to change? And so, you know, my part of the conversation that I'm looking forward to having as we dive in deeper with Chenjerai and with Carrie Hoffman and John Barth from PRX and subsequent shows is around what those changes are looking like and how we preserve that sort of democratic footing and inclusive and kind of the fact that it can be on demand, low cost, and have a wide range of voices and perspectives kind of embraced. How do we keep that and amplify it without mainstreaming it in the negative sense of mainstreaming?
So I think the other thing in that conversation worth just flagging is the notion of collaboration.
Oh my gosh. That's like, that came through so clearly, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we're sitting here in the booth, the two of us, and we've built a great collaboration over the last year and a half we've been doing this. And we look through the window there, and we have a great team of people working to make this possible. And beyond that, any number of other networks that make the show conceivable. And so none of this, while we can focus on the individual voice and the authenticity of the original voice of the podcaster, it really is a network collaborative process to put on How Do You Like It So Far or any other podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, we heard that so clearly from all these, from the podcasters. And now when people ask me, that's the first thing I say is like, you need a team.
It takes a village.
Do not do this alone. And now you understand why, you know, when you're listening to a show or a podcast or radio show and, you know, there's like 15 names at the end that they're being thanked. And I always thought, really? You just got a person sitting in the studio. Why do you need so many people? And now I understand that to do anything, you need a friend, and to do something good, you need a bunch of people. So,
and with that, our team will be back with us next week to make another show.
Thanks so much.